Thank you, Scott. Now, we have a little under 15 minutes for questions leading into the morning coffee break. Given we have the second question and answer session available for further discussions later, I'd probably ask that the questions for this first section be confined largely to the content of Ian Cates and Scott's talk. We have a couple of questions on the screen already. Starting with the first one, given AFRA's desire to dictate the structure of company management, in inverted commas, do they have a view as to who the appointed actuary should report?
The quick answer is no. But I come from the generation where, in the life industry in particular, the chief actuary, the appointed actuary, always reported to the CEO, and it's always bothered me that over time the appointed actuary has sort of slipped down the ranks a bit. So that's a personal bias. I think there are good arguments for having the appointed actuary report to the CEO, maybe report to the CFO, and when you start getting into issues about the chief risk officer and the appointed actuary being the chief risk officer, that changes the equation a little bit as well. Not sure if that helps, but that's the best I can do, I think.
A question for, I think primarily for Scott, but possibly also for APRA. During the ICAP development process, did you get a view from insurers about the extent to which the ICAP requirements had benefited their operations compared with the pre-existing requirements for capital management plans?
Oh, I think so, for sure. I think, as the survey suggested, a lot of insurers found that it was a useful process. I mean, sure, they might have had to be dragged kicking and screaming into it, but I think most of them found that bringing consistency to the definition of risk appetite, capital management, their risk management frameworks, was a healthy thing overall. They're not too keen on the level of documentation that goes along with it, and it has been a distraction for them from the point of view of a lot of board time, a lot of management time invested in it. But I guess it had to happen at some point. So,
okay. One of the strong themes that was in the comments that Ian made was in relation to AA's reporting on catastrophe modelling and related issues in the FCRs. And there's a question directly on this. There appears to be a double up in CAT risk management requirement with ICAP, Board Risk Committee, and FCR. And what's the rationale or justification for the AA to be so involved?
I think if it's managed well, there's not an overlap with those various areas. Well, so the Board Risk Committee is operating at a board committee level. The ICAP covers some things that could be covered in the FCR. And there should be links between the two anyway. The ICAP, though, is not owned by the chief by the appointed actuary, whereas the FCR is, and they have ultimately different aims. So, yes, there is potential for overlap, but I think if it's managed properly and sensibly, it shouldn't generate any great work for the appointed actuary. Okay, do you have anything to add to that? No.
Ian, I think you've on record as having previously expressed concern that with the one-year deferment for the requirement of the ICRC horizontal component to be included in the prescribed capital requirement, that the actual profession and or the insurance industry may have heaved a sigh of relief and sort of dropped the ball in the meantime. You touched on this briefly in your speech. Are you able to expand any more on your current views or concerns about this issue?
Well, I can't say a great deal, to be honest, because when I ask people if there are any issues, then by and large the answer is no, it's going okay. And I'm just a little bit nervous because it does seem to be going that well and nobody's raising any concerns with us. Maybe you can give us some feedback now. So as we sit here at the moment, our impression is that it's all travelling quite well, and come 1 January, all of the horizontal requirements will be addressed quite nicely. But we would welcome any other views.
Have you got anyone in the audience brave enough to stand up and assure them publicly that that will be the case? Okay, still on.
I can say something. I think most insurers panicked about it when it first got announced, and went and spoke to their reinsurance brokers about it rather, you know, excitedly. And I think they've learned over since that period that about the general availability of that kind of cover to deal with horizontal exposures and to somewhat ameliorate the impact of it on capital. So I think, I don't think you'd find too many boards going through this whole ICAP process to the level of detail that they just have if in the back of the mind they have this huge bogeyman of the ICRC and, oh, my God, what's that going to do to my capital standards? So I think they all have a rough idea what it's going to do, I think enough to not be too panicked. It's still a market-based thing, how much reinsurance they can buy, but I think that's probably explained why it's sort of died down a bit. I think most insurers have sort of gone out to the market, found that they can probably get close to what they want. Maybe it's not ideal, it's going to push up capital requirements, but we can live with it, and they've sort of relaxed a bit about it.
I mean, one of the big issues here is it's not the availability so much. It's not huge amounts of capital that you need to buy, but you're actually renting capital off the reinsurers at quite expensive relative to your economic models rates. And so it's just another cost impasse put on insurance companies. So it's not the availability so much. It's the cost of it, I think.
Perhaps a question specifically for Kate, the next one. She can see on the screen. You covered the issue of ICAP documentation and strengths and weaknesses quite extensively. The question's come up, is it really a summary anymore, but virtually the whole process, and does that lead to a significant overlap?
I would disagree with that comment. I think you can sum up some of the things that I've talked about and some of the material we put in the PPG and in the standard quite succinctly in a few sentences or paragraphs. We're not expecting the entire process to be articulated in a summary statement. We've obviously seen a variety of length and detail in the documents, and I commented particularly around some of the ICAP summary statements that had way too much detail around procedure. And what we're looking for is a summary of the actual process, and I think you can do that. And we've seen some examples of being able to do that quite succinctly and quite well. So I would disagree that it's the entire documentation. We do want it to be self-contained, though, so there's a balance there. And I just don't think that that's it's fair to say that it's going to be the full document. Do you want to add anything?
Another question for Kate whether liquidity risk is really a material risk for most general insurers. It's an old truism that the general insurers become insolvent long before they actually run out of cash. Do you want to sort of comment on the issue, Kate?
So I wouldn't disagree with that comment. Certainly, you know, we don't have a capital requirement around it. That should be a good indication of it. But I don't think it should be ignored altogether. And obviously the comments I've delivered are consistent across general insurance and life insurance. Life insurance, it's more of a concern. It should still be considered, though, and we saw absolutely in some cases no consideration of liquidity in any way whatsoever. So we're looking for consideration of all risks that are relevant to that particular insurer.
Another question about ICAP. ICAP's been paraphrased as business continuity management for capital. Should the board go further in relation to testing, e.g. sending out a board note that a trigger's been breached and see what happens?
The idea of testing the ICAP process is an interesting one, just as business continuity plans are tested in many companies. I don't think it's a good idea to send out a board note without some sort of context, but if it was clearly going to be a test, then I think that's actually an interesting idea that's worth considering.
Sorry, Sam, you had an interesting question earlier that sort of got lost from the screen about the Lloyd's standardised capital requirements. Have we still got that one? Okay. A question for Ian or Kate. In relation to CAT models and concerns about their produced different results and a fairly wide funnel of uncertainty, do you envisage APRA prescribing natural perils disaster scenarios for testing across the industry in the same way that Lloyd's does?
There's always an interesting balance between APRA telling the industry what they should be doing and adopting a more principles-based approach, and we tend to get criticised no matter where we sit. In this particular case, we have thought about this idea, but we would prefer not to do that. It's a little bit like saying to APRA, give us the answer and we'll do that and then we'll be okay. We actually want management and board to think these things through in the context of their own business, their own risk profile and so on. In due course, we might come up with some guidance on better practice, but I'm not sure that we'll ever come up with the disaster scenarios as envisaged.
Possible time for just one or more or two more questions before we break for morning coffee. A general one, there's been a lot of emphasis in the ICAT process and internationally in relation to sort of recovery planning for systemically important insurers for exactly what would be the response to disastrous adverse capital events. However much planning in practice, what in something ghastly actually happens, it will be quite different from what's all the plans, almost by definition, because if you'd anticipated it, it wouldn't have occurred. Does anyone have a view at a high level as to, even though the scenarios that have been planned won't in fact be realistic, will they help the recovery process from both the regulatory and the management point of view?
Let me start just by talking about the concept of recovery plans. So if you think of the ICAP as the plan to manage capital, say from your target levels down to the PCR, so this is how we manage in this range, the recovery plan is more about what happens if you go further down below the PCR. And the concept of recovery plan and its cousin, the resolution plan, is alive and well. I didn't mention it earlier when I gave the update on international events activities, but we will see more about that, and we will be doing some work on that idea in APRA. So the idea ultimately would be that the ICAP and the recovery plan would be quite consistent one with the other. The idea of a recovery plan is not restricted to necessarily to systemically important insurers, and I think the whole idea will be extended ultimately to other insurers, particularly internationally active ones. And then the resolution plan is when there's no real chance of recovery, and in many ways the resolution plan would be an APRA issue rather than a company issue. Now, I'm not sure if I answered that question, Adrian. But
I think that'll probably take us through to morning coffee. We will break for morning tea and coffee now. It's pretty much a half-hour break, so if I could ask you all to be back by 10:55, back in your seats, and could we have another round of applause for our speakers, please?